Vasudevaya.
Om Namah Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 10, Chapter 63, Chapter entitled The Lord Fights with Banasura, text number 47. Abhajo yam mamapi
esha
vairochani
suto
sura
sura
praradaya avaro datto na vajo me tavanvaya abhajo yam mamapyesha vairochani suto sura
pradaya
varo
datto
Navajo me tavanvaya Avajo yam mamapyesha Vairochani suto sura Pradaya varo datto Navajo me tavanvaya Avajo yam mamapyesha Vairochani suto sura Praradaya varo datto Navajo me tavanvaya not to be killed.
I am.
He.
Mama.
By me.
Api.
Indeed.
Esha.
This. Vairochani Sutta. Son of Vairochani. Bali. Asura. Demon. Pradaya. To Prahlad. Navara. The benediction. Adatta. Given. Navajya, not to be killed.
Me,
by me.
Tava,
your.
Anvaya,
descendants. Translations by the followers of Srila Prabhupada. I would not kill this demoniac son of Vairochani, for I gave Prahlad Maharaj the benediction that I would not kill any of his descendants. Translation responsibly. I will not kill this demoniac son of Vairochani.
I will not kill this demoniac son of Vairochani.
For I gave Prahlad Maharaj. The benediction that I would not kill.
The benediction that I would not kill.
Any of his descendants. Text 48. It was to subdue Banasura's false pride that I severed his arms, and I slew his mighty army because it had become a burden upon the earth. This demon, who still has four arms, will be immune to old age and death, and he will serve as one of your principal attendants. Thus he will have nothing to fear. Thus he will have nothing to fear on any account. Thus attaining freedom from fear, Banasura offered obeisances to Lord Krishna by touching his head to the ground. Bana then seated Aniruddha and his bride on their chariot and brought them before the Lord. At the front of the party, Lord Krishna then placed Aniruddha and his bride, both beautifully adorned with fine clothes and ornaments, and surrounded them with a full military division. Thus Lord Krishna took his leave of Lord Shiva and departed. The Lord then entered his capital. The city was lavishly decorated with flags and victory arches, and its avenues and crossways were all sprinkled with water. As conch shells, amikas, and dundubi drums resounded, the Lord's relatives, the Brahmanas, and the general populace all came forward to greet him respectfully. Whoever rises early in the morning and remembers Lord Krishna's victory in his battle with Lord Shiva will never experience defeat. Om Gyan Timurandasya Ginanjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Sri Gurave Namaha. Sri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swa Padantikam Pancha Kalpata Rubyascha Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Petitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishna Vepyo Namanamaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadha Srivasadi Gaura Bhaktivrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. So we see that whenever Krishna deals with any demoniac personality or any pious personality, whenever Krishna deals with anyone, there's only auspicious results. Because Krishna is Shuddha or Vishuddha, which means he is pure. There is no contamination within his consciousness. So because there's no contamination within Krishna's consciousness, then there is no contamination with any interaction which takes place with Krishna. Everything in contact with Krishna simply creates auspiciousness for anyone who comes in contact. Whether one is favourable towards Krishna or unfavourable towards Krishna, they receive benediction. Like that. Just like in the battle of Kurukshetra, Prabhupada explains that there were so many people opposing Krishna in the battle, and when they came towards Krishna and Arjuna to be killed, then those who were not envious of Krishna, when they saw Krishna at the time of death, because they were looking towards Arjuna's chariot, and they saw Krishna who was on the front of the chariot at the time of their death, if they were not envious towards Krishna, Prabhupada says then they were liberated and they went to Vaikuntha. Simply because they saw Krishna at the time of death. And they performed devotional service at the time of death. Because at their last moment, they saw Krishna's face and they thought there is nothing more beautiful than this. And because they had that favourable attitude towards Krishna, which is bhakti or devotion, then they went to Vaikuntha. Like that. But those who were envious of Krishna, who had some envy, when they saw Krishna at the time of death, but they had some envy at the last moment, then Prabhupada says they get liberated into his Brahman effulgence. They entered into the Brahma Jyoti, which is also a benediction, because they were taken from the material realm. And all of their karma, you know, their lifetimes of sinful activities, were immediately destroyed just by coming in contact with Krishna. So it's a benediction. And then at some point in time, they will come out of the Brahma Jyoti again, and they will take birth again in the material world. And they will start from a fresh slate like that. So it's a benediction. It's not inauspicious. At least they got something better than what they came with. So that is the nature of Krishna. Whatever you come to Krishna with, you will receive far more than what you deserve, because that is Krishna's nature. The nature of a great person is magnanimity. This is one of his great qualities. Someone who is very auspicious, someone who is a very great person, whenever you come to them, they're very magnanimous, and you always get far more in return than what you are able to offer. That is the nature of a great personality. So Krishna is the greatest personality. So whenever someone comes towards Krishna, no matter what their mentality is or what their offering is or what their consciousness is, you get far more in return. Just like the famous example, one famous example, is Putana. Then Putana came before Krishna and she wanted to kill him. When was the last time someone came to kill you and you offered them benediction? Someone comes to you and says, here, I'm going to poison you. And you say to them, no problem. And please, have my benediction. Come and live with me eternally in my eternal abode, my eternal kingdom. That was Krishna's mentality. Because Krishna is such a great personality. Those who are very... what's the opposite of a Brahmin?
Kripana.
Kripana. Isn't there one Dura? Dura something? Brahmana and Durashaya. Durashaya. Durashaya means like an inauspicious personality. So those who are inauspicious personalities, those who are under the modes of material nature, Durashaya, or Kripanas, which means very miserly people, then they simply reciprocate with you based on the modes of material nature. You come towards them and you have some enmity towards them, and then they deal with you with enmity. That's very low class. Someone who is great, Prabhupada describes who as Brahmana. And Brahmana means someone who is very broad-minded, right? Someone who has very high vision. He doesn't allow himself to come down to a lower person's state of consciousness. Right? And this, as devotees, we have to practice this kind of consciousness like that. This is Krishna consciousness. That we stay situated on our level of consciousness, and if someone comes to us, then we do not come down just because they are on a lower level, or they are reciprocating with us, or how do you say, they are approaching us with under the influence of the modes of material nature. We don't allow ourselves to become affected by their consciousness. But rather, the nature of a Brahmana, or someone who's very broad-minded, or someone who is in spirit... Brahmana means someone who is situated in Brahman, who is on the spiritual platform, whose consciousness is absorbed in spirit. Then, when someone approaches them, they try to lift that person up to their state of consciousness. Just like, one example was Raghunath Das Goswami, who was one of the six Goswamis of Vrindavan. And he was the son of a very wealthy zamindar. Is that what it was called? Zamindar? Zamindar? Like that. His father was very wealthy, like tax collector. Right? Extremely wealthy, like equivalent of what we would call millionaires these days. Son of a millionaire. So, his father would collect tax on behalf of the king, his father and uncle. And they were keeping a lot of the money for themselves. Not exactly for themselves, but they were keeping a lot of the money to distribute to the Brahmanas and the Vaishnavas. They were doing devotional service because the king was a Muslim. So if they collected taxes and then gave it all to him, then he was just going to use it for mundane purposes. So they were keeping some extra, and they were using that to serve Brahmanas and Vaishnavas, using for auspicious activity. But the king found out, and then he sent the soldiers to the village to arrest everyone. So then they came there and they arrested Raghunath Das Goswami. This was before he was a Goswami, when he was a Grihastha. And they took him, and he came before the Muslim king, who was very angry. And Raghunath Das Goswami, he was so pure in his consciousness, and so like childlike and innocent in his consciousness, that when the king was being very angry with him, he was not affected by it. But he remained in a very humble, very sweet, very spiritual state of consciousness. And even though the king was being very aggressive towards him, he was just maintaining his equanimity. He wasn't becoming affected. And he melted the king's heart. And the king began to cry. And he said, I can't do anything to you. I can't punish you. He said, you're like my son. And Raghunath says, yes, you're like my uncle. Like that. So sweet was the way he was dealing with him. So he actually let him go. So this is the nature of a devotee. We have to learn to not allow ourselves to become affected by the modes of material nature when they come into our... when we come in contact with our consciousness. Just like... as devotees, we get up early in the morning, we do our sadhana. Right? What is sadhana for? Right? Sadhana is to purify the consciousness. Right? We chant our rounds, we attend Mangalati, we go to Bhagavatam class, we do Kirtan. Right? This is all to purify the consciousness. Because when you go out into the material world later in the day, then what will happen? Right? Your consciousness becomes bombarded by the modes of material nature, by materialistic association. So, as a devotee, we have to fill our consciousness so much with Krishna that we do not become overwhelmed or overly affected by those lower modes of nature. We don't want to become like the materialists and what their consciousness is like. We want to keep our consciousness on the spiritual platform. Actually, Rupa Goswami describes that there are six elements or phases of devotional service, which he describes in the beginning of the Nectar of Devotion. Does anyone remember the six phases of devotional service? He says there's devotional service on the platform of Vaidhi, or sadhana. Then there is the devotional service on the platform of Bhava. And then there's devotional service on the platform of Prema. And each stage has two qualities. Does anyone remember any of the qualities? Has anyone ever read the Nectar of Devotion?
Is it
has anyone ever heard of the Nectar of Devotion?
Is it that you can be? Is it the part that says you can be a devotee in a passive state and active state?
Yeah, no, that's further. That's the five divisions, five rasas, shanta, dasya, like that. So. That's one of them. What does kleshagni mean? Kleshagni.
It's burning up the
of
material desires.
Yeah, or klesha. Klesha means distress. Kleshagni means all the distresses become destroyed. Like the anxieties become destroyed. When one practices sadhana, when one first takes the devotional service, all of one's distresses immediately go, right? Which are caused by material desires. Like that. So that all becomes burnt up. That's just what you get from practicing sadhana. It's like we're all practicing sadhana bhakti, right? And all our anxieties and distresses are just destroyed, right? We don't have distress. Well, at least if you're a brahmachari, you don't have distress. Right. I remember when I was in the Brahmacharya ashram, there's just no distress. You just get up every day, you do your service for Krishna, you take rest, bas, that's it. There's no distress. When you become a grihastha, then there's some interaction with the material energy, so you have to accept something. But still, for devotees, we don't have this kind of distress that the non-devotees have. Right? It's diminished by sadhana. And the other quality is shubhada. Shubhada means... Shubhada, huh? Means? Yeah, it means auspicious qualities manifest. You'll see when the devotee practices sadhana, then auspicious qualities begin to manifest in their person. You see, devotees, the more they practice devotional service year after year after year, you see they just become more auspicious. They develop more and more good qualities. This is because they perform devotional service, because they're in contact with the Daivi Prakriti, or the internal energy of Krishna. Mahatmanas. To mam partha, daivim prakritim ashritaha. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita that the devotees are absorbed in the internal energy. Therefore, they become mahatma. Right? They become purified, right? By constantly remembering Krishna, by constantly serving Krishna. All good qualities manifest. And then the next two level on bhava bhakti is moksha, lakuta krit, and sudulabha. Sudulabha means... Sudulabha means devotional service is very rare. It is very rare that one gets to the platform of bhava bhakti. Right? Just like we don't see so many devotees practicing sadhana, but how many devotees get to the platform of bhava? Right? Does anyone even know what bhava means? Anyone even heard of that word before? Bhava? So, who gets to the platform of bhava? Bhava means... You begin to understand your relationship with Krishna. I mean, to become so advanced, you begin to understand what is your eternal relationship with Krishna. That is rare. That is called sadulabha. And moksha, lakutakrit, which means moksha, or the desire to become liberated, or to merge into the effulgence of the Lord. Even that, right, which is such a powerful achievement, even that becomes lakutakrit. which means it just becomes insignificant in compared to bhakti. Rupa Goswami says that the ocean, compared to the ocean of the nectar of devotion, the desire or the attainment of impersonal liberation is just like one drop. Right? The pleasure that you can get from becoming an Atmarama or a personality who is feeling the pleasure of merging into the impersonal feature of the Lord, that is compared to one drop to the ocean of the nectar of devotion. Bhakti Ras Amrita Sindhu. Right? What we get, the pleasure we get from devotional service, anything else is insignificant compared to that. Hands up if you feel like that. That everything in this world is insignificant compared to devotional service. 50-50. Yeah, that's okay. That's a good answer. 50-50. Like that. We should feel something like that. We should be feeling in our hearts that everything in this material world is insignificant compared to devotional service. Right? There's nothing like what we have. Right? There's nothing like what we have. That's how a devotee should feel. Right? And when you're very advanced, everything just feels, right? You've got no attachments to this material world. Right? That's advanced. But you know how advanced you're becoming. Prabhupada says in the Krishna book, he says that you know you're becoming advanced when your material desires are becoming insignificant. Right? When you just feel there's nothing in this material world. You just feel, I'm not interested in anything. I'm only interested in serving Krishna. That's all. And then even liberation, which is even greater than material desires, desires for karma or material desires, bhukti, then the desire for mukti is even greater. But even that, to become liberated, that becomes insignificant compared to devotional service. So they're the two qualities of bhava. And then the next two qualities are Sri Krishna Kashani and Sandrananda Visheshatma. Sri Krishna Kashani means that prema bhakti, the quality of prema bhakti, is that it controls Krishna. Krishna becomes overcome by the devotee's prema. So much so that Krishna, Prabhupada says that you can lead Krishna around by the hand just like Mother Yashoda leads Krishna. You can take God by the hand and lead him around. Okay, come with me. Like that. And he will be overcome by your love. Just like if you love someone, right, and you go up to that person, you take their hand, and you say, come with me. Right? Then that person says, okay, of course, I'll come. Wherever you want. Wherever you want, I'll come. Right? No question. Right? Just imagine if Prabhupada comes, right? One day we pray Prabhupada will come. Right? Prabhupada comes and he will take us by the hand, right, and he says, come with me. Then what will you do? Right? Then you'll just go wherever Prabhupada wants, right? Because there should be love there. Right? You love Prabhupada. Right? So if we love Prabhupada, then when Prabhupada comes, hopefully we pray one day he will come and he will take us by the hand. And he'll say, come. Like that, then we immediately will just allow ourselves to be taken. So this is the feeling that Krishna has also. Right? When the devotee comes to Krishna, takes Krishna by the hand and says, Krishna, come. Then Krishna, he just go with that devotee. Right? This is Sri Krishna Kashani. This means by love, Krishna becomes controlled by his devotee. That's his greatest quality. That is Krishna's greatest quality. It rules all of his other qualities. It is his quality of Bhakta Vatsala. And Bhakta Vatsala means Krishna becomes controlled by the devotee. Right? That's his topmost quality. Like that. Hard for people to understand that from other religious traditions and so forth. That that's his greatest quality. That he becomes controlled. Because they usually God is seen in this world as being the controller. Being the supreme entity. But actually his greatest quality, which is higher, which is established in Vaishnavism from the Vedic literatures, from the Srimad Bhagavatam, is that he becomes controlled by the devotee. Right? That's how powerful devotional service is. Right? Just like there's one story in Vrindavan which is told that Krishna used to go and steal yogurt and butter and different things from the gopis' houses. So one gopi, one elderly gopi in Vrindavan, she would always come to Mother Yashoda and she would say to Mother Yashoda that your son is always coming and stealing from our house. And Mother Yashoda said, no, 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 my boy would never do that. No, my boy is very good boy. He would not come and steal. And they'd say, no, 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 he comes all the time and steals. You don't know. No, you think your son is such a good boy, but your son is always coming stealing. Like that. And Mother Yashoda says, no, 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 it could not be like that. And they said, no, 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 your son, we know. So then this one gopi, she wanted to capture Krishna. So one day she ran in and Krishna was there stealing the butter. And she said, now I have you, Nanda Nandana. Now I have you, the son of Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda Nandana. And she took Krishna by the hand and she said, now I will take you to your mother, right? And I will show that you are stealing my butter. So she had Krishna by the hand, she was walking to Mother Yashoda's palace. And she was walking, had Krishna by the hand. She walked around the corner, and Mother Yashoda was there with the gopis. And she said, just see, I have the thief, Mukundeshwar. I have the thief. He's stealing the butter. I have him. And Mother Yashoda and all the gopis are looking. And they're thinking, yeah, let me tell the story. So then Mother Yashoda is looking, all the gopis are looking, and they're thinking, what is that? What is going on? And she's saying, just look, I have the thief. I've caught him. Like that. And Mother Yashoda is thinking, what are you talking about? And he said, I have your son. And she turned back and she looked, and she was holding her own son by the hand. And she looked and she's got her own son by the hand. And she looks back, and Mother Yashoda and all the gopis are just laughing. And they're saying, so what is the point? You have your own son. So she's very confused. She's just totally bewildered. So she walks around the corner, still holding her son by the hand. She walks around the corner, she's just walking away, and she's thinking very bewildered. And she looks back again, and then Krishna is there. She's holding Krishna, and Krishna said, and if you ever do that again, next time I'll turn into your husband. This is our God. The God of mystery. The God of enchantment. Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, of cheats, I am the biggest cheat. Don't ever try to cheat Krishna. Don't ever try to cheat Krishna, right? Because it doesn't work. Because he's bigger than you. Right? He has cheated you even before you thought that you were cheating. Right? Sometimes you think, I will cheat Krishna. No, no one is around, no one will see. I will cheat. Like that. No, no, he knows. Right? And when you think you're getting away with it, right? He's there right next to you and you can't see him. And he's just preparing to embarrass you. In the future and reveal your nonsense like that. We should never steal from Krishna. This is a especially important point. Prabhupada said regarding money which is used for the temple, Prabhupada said that not one cent should ever be used for sense gratification. Right? Not even one cent should be used for sense gratification. Right? Because it belongs to Krishna. And if you get into that consciousness, right, that I can use, yeah, it's okay, I can use a bit and I can waste money. Right? You see, Prabhupada in 1966 in New York, if you see Prabhupada's diary, Prabhupada, this is before ISKCON even really started. Prabhupada every day, he would write down, like in his diary, this is before ISKCON, you know how big ISKCON was back in 1966? Right? How many members were there in 1966?
Three or four.
Right? Huh? 20 or 30. No, 1966 there was one member. Right? In the beginning of this movement there was one person in ISKCON. Right? There was only A.C. Bhakti Vedanta Swami. Right? There wasn't anyone else. And he was so meticulous, so particular, that he would keep accounts. It was only him. Right? And he would keep accounts, like ISKCON accounts, right? And you see in the book, like if you see what probably he would say, like, I spent $1.47 on a block of butter. Right? Prabhupada was keeping accounts. He only had like probably $40 or something. That's how much ISKCON he possessed. ISKCON's total wealth in 1966 was something like $40. And Prabhupada every day was writing down $1.47, like that, and then he would have the balance of the account. You know, so it means now we've got, $38.53 left. Right? So particular about every cent. That was his nature. Right? So devotees should not become careless. This is not the mood of Prabhupada. This is not the mood of ISKCON. Become careless in spending Krishna's money unwisely and so forth. So this should be the mood of how the devotees follow. So this quality is called Sri Krishna Kashani, which means bhakti controls Krishna, prema controls Krishna, love controls Krishna. And the other quality is called Sandrananda Visheshatma. Sandrananda Visheshatma means that the devotee's consciousness becomes so full of Krishna that nothing else can penetrate it. Right? Ananda. What does Ananda mean?
Bliss.
Well, hands up if you are feeling bliss at this point in time. Good. Good. Two people. That's good. We should be feeling bliss in devotional service. Right? We should be feeling ecstatic in devotional service. That is the nature of devotional service. A devotee should always feel blissful. Right? Because that is the nature of devotional service. If you're not feeling blissful, why is that? Because your consciousness is not absorbed in Krishna. Because if your consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, you cannot help but feel blissful. Prabhupada says, just make an experiment. Right? There's one, it's a letter or something by Prabhupada, and he says, just make an experiment. He says, just chant Hare Krishna and see if you will become happy. Just make an experiment. Right? So if your consciousness is absorbed in Krishna, you cannot be anything but blissful. That is the nature of Krishna consciousness. Right? A devotee will always feel blissful. And if you're not feeling blissful, it means your consciousness is not absorbed in Krishna. It means it's absorbed in Maya. Right? Something other than Krishna. Right? But if you're absorbed then, so the devotee is so absorbed in Krishna, right, on the level of prema, their consciousness is just so absorbed in Krishna, they can't think of anything else but Krishna, then nothing else can penetrate it. That's how full their consciousness becomes of Krishna. It is so full of Krishna, nothing else can penetrate. No thought for sense gratification, or no thought for material desire, or nothing can penetrate, because there's no room to penetrate. Nothing else can come in. So this is the level that we need to come to. So when we go out during the day and we contact the material world, then we should not allow ourselves to become overcome by the material energy. We should be like brahmanas, very broad-minded. We should keep our consciousness upwards. Right? So our consciousness will stay upwards, and we should not allow ourselves to become affected by the modes of material nature. But this can only take place if we fill our consciousness with Krishna. Because if our consciousness is full of Krishna, then the modes of material nature cannot affect us. We will not come down. So we should not allow our consciousness to become affected by lower things. A devotee needs to keep our consciousness absorbed on the higher platform. And one reason why we need to keep our consciousness absorbed on a higher platform is so that we can help others. No? Because ISKCON is a preaching movement. Right? This movement is full of preachers. Prabhupada said ISKCON is meant to create a class of
Brahmanas.
What does that mean?
First class
people. Yeah, it means people whose consciousness is absorbed in Brahman, spirit. Right? The ISKCON members, the core members, especially the temple devotees, right, and also the leaders of the congregation, they're meant to be brahmanas. Brahmanas means their consciousness is absorbed in spirit. So that when other people come in contact with us, what will take place?
They become
uplifted. Yeah, they become uplifted by our consciousness. Right? That is why devotees have to remain very pure and very strict. So Prabhupada said, you have to strictly chant 16 rounds a day. Right? And those rounds have to be very attentive. Right? To this day, we see devotees, you know, I try, what I learned from my Guru Maharaj, from my spiritual master, is when you're chanting japa, right, that is your only activity. Right? Japa is, right, your fundamental activity of your day, of your life. Right? It's not something you do while you're doing something else. Right? And to this day, we see devotees all the time going here and going there and, you know, chanting their rounds and doing this and putting the washing in the machine and, you know, walking around and, you know, checking the roster and, you know, what are you checking the roster or are you chanting the japa? You know, work it out in your mind. Prioritize in your mind. What are you doing? Even sometimes I've seen, you know, devotees reading books and chanting japa. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. Which one are you doing? Are you doing Shravana or are you doing Kirtana? Make up your mind. Control your mind. You can only chant good japa when the mind is under control. How do you control the mind? By controlling it. You have to control your mind. Right? You can't just let it do whatever it wants. Right? Otherwise you don't make advancement. So devotees become pure by chanting attentive rounds. Right? If you chant inattentively, your consciousness will never become purified. Never. I remember one time we met Sachinandan Swami in Jagannath Puri. We were in Jagannath Puri with a group of devotees in 2000. And we were at one place called Chakat Parvat, which is where Lord Chaitanya, he would see a sand dune in Puri, he would see that as being Govardhan Hill. Very auspicious place. And Bhakti Sananta Saraswati Thakur, he took a vow to chant something like 1 billion names of Krishna. He took a vow, I think it took him 11 years to complete that vow. So he would chant at this particular place where Lord Chaitanya would see in Puri, where he would be absorbed in seeing Govardhan Hill, where Puri meets Vrindavan, like that. So it's a very sacred place. And we walked around the corner and I nearly tripped over Sachinandan Swami because I was circumambulating the temple and I walked around and there's someone sitting there and I kind of went back and looked down and it was Sachinandan Swami, who's one of our ISKCON gurus. So we paid our obeisances to him and then the group came around the corner and paid our obeisances and he was chanting japa. And then he said, he was kind of very absorbed in a very deep state of consciousness of chanting. And he said, I'll have to come back to the surface. He said, give me a few moments. And so then he kind of prepared himself, came more back to like an external state of consciousness. And then he said to us, well, you have all come. You know, obviously Krishna's arranged that you've all come, so I'll speak something. So he spoke to us for 10 or 20 minutes, our group, and gave us some instructions. And one thing he said to us, which I always remember, is that he said, in spiritual life, we make advancement by getting Krishna's mercy. That's how we make advancement. Right? It's not so much by our endeavour. I mean, it is our endeavour to an extent. But mainly, we make advancement by Krishna's mercy. Right? Krishna is giving us so much mercy and he's pulling us towards him. You know, it is said we take one step to Krishna, Krishna takes 10 steps to us. So primarily, it is Krishna who is bringing us back to the spiritual world. So Maharaj said that, so then how do we get Krishna's mercy? Because devotees are always thinking, how do I get Krishna's mercy? How do I get Krishna's mercy? Devotees are always thinking, like tomorrow's Janmashtami, right? It's the most special day for the devotees of the whole year, is Janmashtami, the most auspicious day. So we are always thinking, what will we do on Janmashtami to get Krishna's mercy? What will we do to get Krishna's mercy? Devotees are always thinking, every day, how do I get Krishna's mercy? So Maharaj was saying that he's been practicing devotional service for many years and he was thinking there's so many ways, so many services you can do to get Krishna's mercy. And he said that probably for him, the way that he thought, he was thinking the way to get Krishna's mercy the most was to go and preach in very dangerous places. So when the war was going on in Kosovo, in Croatia, Serbia, that part of the world, he was going into the war zone and preaching. You know, going in and preaching while there's a war going on, you know. So he's thinking that's the highest way to attract Krishna's mercy is to go and preach in very difficult places. Just like Prabhupada said, I'll take the dust of the feet of any devotee who goes and preaches in a Muslim country. Right? Prabhupada himself said that. He said, I'll take the dust of the feet of any devotee who goes and preaches in. So we think that's the way to get the most mercy from Krishna. And Sachinandan Swami said, after being a devotee for many years, he said, I understood that even that is not the way to get the most mercy from Krishna. He said, the way to get the most mercy from Krishna is to chant attentively. Right? More than any other form of devotional service. By attentive chanting, right? By chanting your rounds, that's how you get the most mercy from Krishna. Right? And if you chant attentively, any other service becomes easy, practically. Right? If you chant attentively, if you chant very good japa, then all of your other services will become easy. Right? Because Krishna will give you so much mercy and so much assistance. But if you don't chant properly, it doesn't matter what other service you do, right? You won't have the same potency. You won't get the same mercy from Krishna like that. So that's why, devotees, we have to stay very pure. Right? We have to bring our consciousness to a pure level. And how do we do that? We have to be very strict in our vows. It means we have to chant very well and follow the four regulative principles strictly. Like that. Yeah? Prabhupada says no meat eating, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling. And this is the purity of ISKCON. Right? Prabhupada said that purity was the force. If there's no purity, how does the movement go on? Right? If the devotees are not practicing spiritual life purely, how does the movement spread? Right? If we're not pure in our sadhana, if we're not pure in our discipline, then how do people become purified by our contact? Right? And you can say, well, I'm not an advanced devotee, right? Which is true, we're not advanced devotees. But we can say we're not advanced devotees and we're insignificant. And no, but you have to understand, at this point in time in Kali Yuga, at this point in time in Melbourne, Australia, you know, if you look at the earth, you know, in this particular place on the earth, you know, this part of the little country called Australia on earth, and this part of Australia, right, this city called Melbourne and this area of the world, there's no one else for conditioned souls to associate with. Who else are they going to, you say, well, we're very fallen, we can't help anyone. Who else are they going to associate with? There isn't anyone else. There's only us. You know? There isn't anyone else. Right? So we have to become purified in our consciousness. Right? We have to accept the responsibility of being the servants and the messengers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu gave the order. Yari Deka, Tari Kaha, Krishna Upadesh, Amara, Agyaya, Guru Hana, Tara Edesh. Mahaprabhu said, on my order you become guru. Right? Are you willing to accept that? Are you willing to accept Lord Chaitanya's order? Right? You can say humility. A devotee can say humility means I don't want to become a guru. Right? But deeper humility means to become a guru as a service to Mahaprabhu because that's his order. That's more humble. You can say, oh, I'm not a guru. You know, I'm not going to take leadership. It's more humble to follow Lord Chaitanya's order. Right? None of us could make advancement if it wasn't for our gurus. Right? And our gurus, why are they great? Why are they qualified? Why are they pure? Because they accepted Mahaprabhu's order. Right? You become a guru on my behalf. Right? So all of us have to become gurus. Right? We may not be initiating gurus. Right, but we have to become gurus. We have to become personalities that other devotees will come and other conditioned souls will come to and take shelter of. Right? And we have to help people to advance in Krishna consciousness. That is a service. It's a service. Right? It's not that we're doing it because we want some praise or we want some qualification. Those desires have to be cleansed away. Right? The point is that we have to become qualified to help others, save others from the on behalf of Lord Chaitanya, on behalf of the Guru Parampara. Okay, so we'll stop here and we'll see if there's any questions or comments on what we discussed.
Would you please tell us where exactly you met Sakini Swami? Is it near Totagopina temple or?
Yeah, just near there. You know, opposite Totagopina temple, there's a Gaudiya Mutt?
Yeah.
At that place.
Very efficient.
Yeah.
You know how we all have a position in the spiritual world? So when we go back to that position. And also, some devotees don't go straight back in the spiritual world. They go to have a couple of stop-offs at the higher planets as they go back. Is it, if you've got a position in Vaikuntha, is it, and you go back to there in the spiritual world, is it possible to make more advancement and go to Vrindavan from there? Or?
Yeah, I don't know where you got the part about the stop-offs.
I read it in Bhagavatam.
Do you make some stop-offs?
Sorry?
It says that? That you make some sort? Prabhupada says?
I'm not sure. I think so.
You have to show us where it says that. Generally, the principle is that when you become qualified to go back to Godhead, then you go to the universe in the material world where Krishna is performing his pastimes, and you get trained up. You take birth at that place in the womb of a gopi, and you get trained up by the eternal associates how to become a pure devotee. And then from there, then you go back to Goloka Vrindavan. If your swarup or your constitutional position, your eternal relationship with Krishna or with Lord Narayan is meant to be in Vaikuntha, then you will stay in Vaikuntha. You won't go to Goloka Vrindavan. Tomorrow Krishna Maharaj asked Prabhupada that question one time. He said to Prabhupada, is it possible that someone changes their swarup? You know, someone goes from Vaikuntha to Goloka, or you know, in Goloka someone goes from cowherd boy to gopi, like that. And Prabhupada thought for a moment and he said, it is possible, but generally it does not happen. And Prabhupada said that spiritual life is not static, it is ecstatic. Which means it's possible, but it doesn't usually happen. Any other question or comment?
If you could explain the term attentively a little more. If you explain the term attentively a little more.
Chanting?
Yeah, chanting is attentively.
Then when you chant, then you should listen to the sound. Right? When we're chanting. Not that when we're chanting, we are thinking of other things or our consciousness is on other things or like that. But you should be absorbed in hearing the sound of the chanting. So attentive means that one is not distracted by other things while chanting. It means when you're chanting, you should not be doing other activities. Chanting is a meditation, right? It is jhana, it is like meditation, japa. So it means that when you chant, you should be focused just on chanting the holy name, hearing the sound of the chanting. So generally, it is said that we should sit cross-legged when chanting, generally, right? You should be sitting, because when you sit like this, when you sit cross-legged in Padmasana, right? When you're sitting in this lotus position, right, is when that's what we sit in when we chant and when we come to class and so forth. For the subtle body, for the mind, right, it is easier to concentrate. Right? When you sit like this, automatically your mind is focused, it is concentrated. Right? But when you sit like, you know, devotees sometimes they'll sit like in other positions, you know, sit like more relaxed or like that. As soon as you go into that position, you'll see the mind becomes less attentive. You'll see that. This moment. So you should sit like this, just like when you are. If you listen to Prabhupada chanting japa, there's a japa tape, and Prabhupada is chanting japa. It says on the japa tape, Prabhupada interrupts the japa, and Prabhupada says, sit properly. Right? During the. So sit properly means back is straight. Right? See, sometimes devotees are chanting and they're like this, and then they just go. Right? Not good. So you should have to sit with back straight, right? Eyes should be open, right? Sometimes you can close like that, but only close if you don't fall asleep. If you fall asleep, don't close. Keep them open like that. But if you, you know, we can chant with our eyes closed, that's okay. But if you don't fall asleep, that's the point. So you have to sit properly, right? Breathing has to be properly. Everything has to be properly. Mind has to be focused. When you chant japa, then you stop doing everything you do. Right? Generally, we go to a very quiet place, or a place which has a spiritual atmosphere, or a place where there's no distraction. Just like, you know, sometimes devotees chant japa on the tram. You know, good luck. You know, all glories. Very good luck. But you're not going to chant very attentively on the tram. Like that. If you're chanting regularly, your 16 rounds, you know, on trams or in aeroplanes or like this, it's going to be very difficult for you to chant nicely, to make advancement through chanting. You have to go to a quiet place, a secluded place, like a place which has a spiritual atmosphere, just like sometimes we chant in the temple in front of the deities, or in Prabhupada's room, or places like that where there's no distraction, where there's a strong spiritual atmosphere. And then you focus, you sit down and you concentrate, I'm going to chant now. I'm not doing other things now. Right? You turn off your mobile phone, do all these things. Right? Focus on your chanting as much as possible. That should be the system, like that. And then absorb yourself in the chanting. Hear the chanting, like that. So there's some things on attentiveness. Any other questions?
As you said, the spiritual atmosphere very close to Tulsi. The Tulsi Maharani is near Tulsi Maharani.
Yeah. Yeah, it says in Chaitanya Charitamrita that Haridas Thakur used to chant in front of Tulsi Devi. And Prabhupada says in the purport that chanting in front of Tulsi Devi is thousands of times more potent. Like that. So that's also another very important instruction. Any other questions or comments? Okay, Srila Prabhupada Ki.